It's often hard to get still enough that we can really listen deeply within. The distractions, the fears, the busyness all tend to get in the way. Dogen said that in order to practice Zen meditation, we do have to meet ourselves. We have to meet ourselves, come to know ourselves, and in coming to know ourselves, forget ourselves. Forget ourselves completely. And the most pure and profound faith arises out of that forgetting. We discover that we are much more than we think we are. We are more than our fears and our distractions. We're more than our thoughts. We're more than just our body, even. We encompass the whole world. And there's a great freedom in that knowledge. And it is in the practice of our spiritual tradition and also in the practice of creativity that we can forget ourselves completely and let that which is bigger than ourselves move through us, express itself. But first we have to know ourselves. We have to meet ourselves and all of who we are and accept all of who we are. One of the really wonderful things about doing a practice period like this is that we do get the opportunity to explore ourselves. And it's important that we explore our creative history as well as our spiritual history. I look at the project that I'm working on. I'll give you a sneak preview before the non-residential retreat. It's based on a craft that my grandmother taught me when I was just 4 or 5 years old, and that is knitting. And when I'm knitting, I see that my grandmother, my history, my ancestors are there with me. And I come from a long line of pioneers. My father's side homesteaded here in Washington State in the 1800s. My grandfather was born here, as was my father, and as I was as well. They were a people that had to make things. They had to make things to survive, because when they arrived here, they had almost nothing with them. And everything they needed, they had to make with their hands. My whole life, I've been exposed to the great capability of being able to use my mind, my creativity, to make things. And I like to go as close to the source as I possibly can. If I'm going to be working with wool, I want to go to the sheep. If I'm going to be working with wood, I want to go to the forest. And I think somehow my spiritual practice comes out of that, wanting to go to the source. I think that the real inspiration of creativity in all of us is that expressing the source of who we are, going as deep as we can to the source. So even beyond trees or sheep, what is there? I think the first steps in creativity and in meditation are difficult. And because of that, it's very helpful to establish a ritual. A ritual that will get us to the cushion, get us to the piano, get us to our desk, get us to the place where we are going to create. Even when we love to do something, it's hard to allow the discipleship, our discipleship, to lead the way over our momentary wants, our resistances, and our reluctance. And turning any practice into a ritual eliminates our need to question why we are doing it. And that's most helpful, because both a spiritual practice and a creative practice are a process. There is an end result, but the end result is beside the point. It isn't the point of why we are doing it. In the Buddhist practice, we call this aimlessness, or in Sanskrit, apranita. And with any creative endeavor, we begin with an idea. But the happiest results are when the project or the idea takes on a life of its own. Writers often talk about this, that they've created a character, and then the character decides what's going to happen next, who they're going to be, and how they're going to perform. We just came back from Ashland, where we attended the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, which we do every year. Romeo and Juliet was one of the Shakespeare plays that was performed this year. And in it, there is this wonderful, wonderful character named Mercutio. Mercutio is killed off pretty quickly, and there is talk in Shakespearean circles that Shakespeare had to kill off Mercutio because he was going to steal the whole play. He was such a vibrant, alive character that had such a strong life of his own that he was going to take over the whole play. And so he had to kill him off in order for the story of Romeo and Juliet, which is, of course, a very ancient story, to unfold. Not only is it important to have a particular ritual that we, an act that we perform to get us to our cushion, to get us to our desk, to get us to the easel, the camera, to get us to the studio where we move. It's also important to have a place. And it is a place where we create, just like we have a place where we come to sit. When people first come to meditation and they ask me, well, you know, how do I get started with this? I always suggest that they begin by establishing a place in their house, a place where they go for sitting meditation, a place where they go when they're angry to breathe and to calm themselves, and to have the things that they want there to support them. It might be a bell or a candle. It might be a vase of flowers or incense. It might be pictures of people they love. But that place then holds an energy, and it supports us when we go there. It supports us to become calm, at peace, and present, letting go and coming back to ourselves. And it's the same for having a creative process, creative act. It's most helpful that we have a particular desk where we go when we're writing something, and we go back to that place, and it supports us then to enter into that mind, the mind that is expressing itself through our words. It's the same with any particular artistic endeavor. To have a place, and it doesn't need to be fancy or elaborate or huge. It can be a little corner, but it's a place where our creative inspiration comes alive and begins to express itself. Giving ourselves to the moment is our practice of mindfulness and meditation. Coming back over and over again, not getting lost in our fears or our passions. Coming back over and over, giving ourselves to the page, to movement, to music, and entrusting ourselves to the unfolding. This is truly forgetting ourselves. And we all know the mystery and exhilaration and deep satisfaction that arises when we lose ourselves in something. Something larger than ourselves takes over. So in establishing a ritual, it might be as simple as having a beautiful vase of flowers on your desk. It might be having to dust off your instrument, your piano, your violin, and get everything clean and beautiful before you begin. It might be having to sharpen your pencil and doing it with complete mindfulness before you begin a drawing. It might be making a cup of tea, going for a walk. All of these can become rituals that, as we establish them, they begin to move us into the place within ourselves where our creative expression arises, the place within ourselves where we forget ourselves. Every morning at Mountain Lamp, we enter the meditation hall and light a candle and a stick of incense. And already our practice has begun. Here at Dharma Gate, I really encourage you all to begin your practice as soon as you walk up the steps, taking each step up to Dharma Gate with complete mindfulness. Already beginning to change from your everyday busy mind, your planning, your distractions, your busyness, already dropping it, leaving it on the sidewalk, and taking each step with great mindfulness. And then by the time you enter the meditation hall, enter the kitchen, we see our friends, we're completely present. And how happy we are to be together, to see each other. A warm hug, a smile. These confirm our connection in this wonderful practice of mindfulness. And then by the time we enter the meditation hall and bow and take our seat, find a very comfortable way to sit, with our legs crossed or underneath us and our hands in the meditation mudra, already we are completely present. And then it doesn't take a lot to enter into the meditation. The ritual is most important to get us to our cushion, to begin our time of creative process, because that is when we are most likely to find an excuse or hit resistance or chicken out or give up or get distracted. So having a ritual already begins the process of us entering into our meditation or our creative process. Another thing that's very helpful to remember is just don't make it the last thing that you do after the dishes are done and the dog's been bathed. Make a habit of having your creative practice and your spiritual practice be a regular part of daily life. I say make it a habit. Make it a habitual part of your schedule. And there's an interesting paradox here, because on one hand, we're making something a habit, but by its very nature, our meditation, our mindfulness, and our creative process means creating something new. It's best if it's fresh. It's best if when we sit on the cushion, it's like the very first time we've ever sat down to practice. When we pick up a camera, it's the very first photograph we've ever taken. And bringing that mind, that beginner's mind, each time to our spiritual and to our creative process. Because we are going to be making something out of nothing. Repetition is also a really important part. In our meditation tradition, we call it practicing. And it is a repetition, coming back to our breath over and over again. It's also very essential in any creative process, any art that we take up. When we look at traditional spiritual practices, we see that art very often arises out of them. It's very much an expression, a creative expression of what we discover inside when we go within. Our own teacher in Plum Village is well known for both his calligraphy and his poetry. They are an expression of his essential nature, his true being. They are not caught in an idea of self. Same with Hakuin Zenji, who lived in 1700s in Japan. Very frequently there are exhibits of his calligraphy and his paintings. A couple of years ago, Jack was back in New York visiting his family, and there was an exhibit of Hakuin's work in New York that was absolutely stunning, absolutely wonderful, and he brought home a book for me that is so alive. When you look into the pictures he drew of some of the people, it's like they could step right off the page. Even though they are mendicants and monks from the 1700s in Japan, they are completely alive still today. And it's also essential that we touch that kind of aliveness, being awake in our meditation, every moment. We give ourselves our full selves until we forget ourselves. And part of that is having no attachment to outcome. This last weekend at Mountain Lamp, our friend Desiree led us in a practice of making cards and journals, creative journaling. Brought all the materials. And every one of us started out with an idea of something from the materials at hand. And all that we made turned out totally different than we expected. It was a complete surprise. The media presented its own life, a life of its own. It's most helpful to have these rituals of preparation, a place, a time, the accoutrements that support us, because they arm us with self-confidence and self-reliance, and they disarm our distractions and fear. When we sit on the cushion in meditation, or when we are at our desk or in front of the easel, that sheet of white paper, we are alone with our body, our ideas, our needs, our memories, our passions, and our fears. We are alone with ourselves. And it's helpful to encounter ourselves with confidence and a sense of self-reliance. It stretches us, both our practice and the creative habit. It asks us to stretch ourselves and our self-definition and also our self-knowledge, because we come to know not only our strengths but also our weaknesses. It asks that we keep showing up for ourselves, for the art of our lives. And sometimes that's really difficult, and we run into blocks, into resistances, places where we get caught. And we see those, they become illuminated by our meditation practice. For example, the stories that we tell ourselves over and over and over again. Usually we get frustrated with ourselves about that, but it's not necessary to be frustrated with ourselves, because usually we're telling it over and over again in this effort to understand, to resolve, to be able to let go and put it down. We get caught there. And we run into that with creativity, places where we get caught. And we just keep trying to make something, to think something up. We're straining to reach for something that's like just beyond our grasp. But when we are truly moving from that place of presence and creativity, and we get something down, there is no strain. It's like we're not getting something. It's like we're not doing something. We're receiving something. I have a friend who does a lot of writing, And he said he gets to places in his writing where he just doesn't know what the next thing is to do. And he goes out onto the front porch and he walks back and forth and back and forth, emptying himself. And often he says there's something that sparks his creativity, a new idea that comes from nature. It might just be a rush of wind that stirs up the fall leaves, and all of a sudden this next idea forms and he knows exactly where the writing should go. In looking at a dollar bill, if you see this at the backside from where the great seal with the bald eagle is, there is a picture of a mysterious pyramid that has a floating eye. And the motto written on that side is Anuit Coptis. And that means Providence has favored our undertakings. What a wonderful thing that comes from our culture. We recognize in this that when we turn towards ourselves, we find that we're not alone. Mysteriously, we are met. Mysteriously, we are supported. And this is very much true both in our spiritual practice as well as in the creative endeavors. That when we truly let go, the whole providence favors us, supports us. It's very mysterious, and certainly any words distract from the true meaning of this. But in this understanding, we see that the pessimism, the negativism, the separation and desperation that we often feel in looking at the world becomes undermined with optimism. And optimism is very productive. We, of course, are no stranger to pessimism or to fear in either our creative practices or our mindfulness practice. They visit us all the time. But when we touch into that truer sense of who we are, truer sense of our connection with Providence, with the universe, we feel there's great blessing and support there. We don't have to do it all. We aren't doing it all by ourselves. We learn to listen for that quiet voice within ourselves, to let it be what is being expressed, not what we're trying to make happen. And this kind of listening is a really important part of both our meditation practice and also any creative process that we enter into. It is an act of faith in some ways to trust that when we reach a block, we hit a difficulty, that we will be supported through that difficulty if we persevere, as the dollar bill says, by Providence. As we say, by the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. That we aren't alone, that we aren't separate. It takes an act of faith initially. But eventually, we touch our ultimate freedom in that. And our optimism arises out of that deep understanding. There are things that we can do actively to help us when we find that we are blocked. I spoke about this earlier, that there's actually research now that shows in the prefrontal cortex there's two parts or two channels in the brain. And the one channel is the channel that gets us stuck, where we end up going in circles in our mind over and over and over again, where we see there's no way out, where we get caught, lost, stuck, stopped. And there's a side then that is more open and more free, I believe it's called the medial channel is the one that gets stuck, and the lateral one is the one that allows us to move. And interestingly enough that I said that word move, because the way we are able to move from being stuck into a place of connection is through our body and through movement. That allows us to move out of the medial channel of the prefrontal cortex into the lateral, which is creative, open, and free. So my friend said when he gets stuck, he walks back and forth on the porch. I believe Thich Nhat Hanh both discovered and explored this for himself as well during the war in Vietnam, and afterwards when he was in exile, he said that he had encountered so much difficulty that it was impossible for him to be sitting on the cushion. And so he found that he could, however, do walking meditation no matter what he was feeling, fear, desperation, anxiety, sadness, deep grief. All of those things came through. And he was able to walk with them. When he didn't know what to do, sitting on the cushion was too difficult, but he was able to walk and remain present with each step, touching the earth and feeling the support of the earth with each step. Although it was not a new practice, he realized and actualized the practice of walking meditation, which he teaches us, and teaches us an important part of our practice, to walk in nature, to nourish ourselves with the earth, to let providence support our undertakings. In this way, whenever we feel stuck, distracted, caught, touching any of the weaknesses that keep us from being free in our expression, we can come back and move, literally move our bodies, and find the way that expresses itself from within you. Listening again to that still voice within, that intuitive voice, your muse, the great world as it expresses itself through you. Listening and then moving in that way to unstick yourself. Move into that open, free, creative place. Move from a place of negativity and pessimism, fear or distraction, into a place of freedom and optimism. Because there is something indomitable about humans, something about our spirit that is absolutely wonderful. And we don't have to get caught. We can transform and transcend anything that's given to us. I read recently about a Vietnamese poet named Nguyen Chi Tien. He died on October 2nd at age 73. I think his life was a real expression of the indomitable human spirit. He wrote poems in response to the desperation of Vietnam during the war. And when the communists took over Vietnam in 1975, he made a desperate dash into the British embassy in Hanoi, past the guard, demanding to see the ambassador. The guard couldn't stop him. And he just crashed through a table and ran into the center of the embassy. The noise that he created brought out three Englishmen, and he thrust a whole book of poems at them. And then he let himself be arrested. He was sent to Hoa Lo, and he lived there for many, many years. It was considered the gulag of Vietnam. And they didn't give him pen or paper or books, and so he memorized at night each one of his hundreds of poems and carefully revised them day after day and then filed them away mentally. He found companions in poetic ancestors from ancient China, and in his mind he would sup with them. He would talk to them. He would dream of floating on Halong Bay. And he lived there. And finally, not until 1995, was he released after spending many years in solitary confinement. And he came to the United States, and he lived in Little Saigon in Orange County, California. He continued to share his poems and his memories of fellow poets, and he was recognized as one of the great poets of Vietnam. No matter what had happened to him, the poetry inside him could not be destroyed. He was awarded International Poetry Awards in 1985. He wrote that if people could see his heart, they would see it was an ancient pen and inkstand gathering dust, or a poor roadside inn offering only the comfort of an oil lamp. But it was also a paddy field waiting for the flood rains of August, so that it can overflow into 1,000 waves, white-crested ones that will sweep everything away. Nguyễn Chí Thiện had a spirit of a poet within him that could not be destroyed, no matter what oppression he experienced. And he found and expressed that through his connection to his ancestors, his poetic ancestors, to the earth, his connection with the earth, and connection with his own mind and heart, listening within himself, and keeping the poems alive within himself. He's very much an example for us of the freedom that is available in each moment, that our truest nature, which is expressed through our creativity and our art, can never be destroyed and never be taken away from us. Our essential nature does not know birth and death. And it is there that there is complete freedom to sing, to dance, to play, to create. And we are an expression of that spirit. And our practice together during this practice period is to play with that, to see how it lives within us, to find habits that allow it to express itself through us.
This week we're learning the practice song, Arrived, Arrived, and we have special guest artists. The Wake Up Tour is here to sing Arrived, Arrived for us.
Arrived, arrived.